This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're talking about data on today's Open for Business with Subhendu Mukherjee and Deviga Doreraj. They're the people behind a Singaporean-based startup called The 10th Floor. It's a company that takes a two-pronged approach to data itself. On one front, they are a consultancy. They've worked with big brands to harvest and harness their data in a more meaningful way, which means converting it to marketing and sales and growth. And on another front, they educate. The 10th Floor conducts workshops and classes to teach people how to better understand data because they believe companies would do better by hiring not just data scientists, but data translators as well, who would know how to market the data that they've been given. So guys, I'm calling this interview the democratization of data. It's something that you've mentioned a few times in your first email to us. What is that exactly like? Like, what do you mean by the democratization of data?
Remember the times when to do a website, we had to get software engineers to write HTML codes and JavaScript. Today, if you talk to anyone about doing up a website, nobody will say, oh, I need to go and get a software engineer. Because there are enough tools that have made it possible to just plug and play and drop and build complex websites, including e-commerce. If you look at WordPress, if you look at Wix, if you look at Shopify, they're just off the shelf, very sophisticated, reasonably built up to do whatever customizations you want. Even the payment interfaces are becoming plug and play. APIs are getting very easy to use. So the same thing is happening to data as well. So there was a time when data would have meant you have statisticians and you have data engineers and you have very expensive and rare kinds of hard skills that were required to work with the tools that are already there. So that is changing with tools like Tableau, with tools like Power BI, with tools like Google Data Studio. All these tools, not only are they cheaper and easier to use, with tons of instructional videos all abound. They're also integrating slowly but surely artificial intelligence capabilities, machine learning capabilities, natural language processing capabilities, and they're making it very accessible. I mean, today a Power BI costs like $10 a month as a professional version. That is what I mean by democratization. Today, as an individual, you can decide that you want to get into data analysis, data visualization, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and you do not have to go through a complex process, jump through hoops of learning 25,000 different kinds of codes and, you know, having to hire complex engineers and scientists. And I think the industry and people like us owe it to the business community at large to reveal the access, reveal the functionalities, reveal the possibilities, and essentially establish the fact that if you take the grind of complex engineering and complex mathematics and complex statistics out of it, which is a lot of it is pretty much out of the box now, you're given the time and the space to do the thinking. Because data on its own is meaningless. Unless you found a story that's worth telling.
So you're saying that data doesn't have to be a foreign language, like quote unquote, that only sort of like data scientists can understand. The same way I don't have to know HTML or CSS to build a website. You know, I can use like WordPress or Squarespace. When did you realize that this was a pain point in companies, that this was a gap that a startup like the 10th Floor could help fill?
So I did a lot of experiments with myself, with my own money, because nobody would pay me to do my experiments. And we created quite a few experimental models. Okay, what ifs, literally what ifs we use the data this way. What if we used a behavioral data to identify patterns? And what if we did some multivariate testing? And what if we used that data? And we found a few brave clients at first. We also were selling ourselves cheap at that time. You know, combination of brave clients and palatable pricing helped.
In the beginning.
Yes, in the beginning. She wants to make sure that we are not cheap anymore. So then we got the opportunity to build up a portfolio of success stories. Mm-hmm. And that told us that, okay, the hypothesis we had has now market proof. So since then, we've worked with a whole bunch of multinational clients, a whole bunch of different kinds of clients. And every time we have realized that regardless of whether or not we have a deep understanding of the category, if we can get some data and work in partnership with the client, we can get to answers better than market research, often quite quickly and often within reasonable cost. So that kind of got us thinking, where else could this be applied? Mm-hmm. So we recently did a employee value proposition project, which is an HR project.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with consumers, with Excel Axiata. Turned out to be a success. Mm-hmm. That led us to do some more of similar kind of work. Now, as we keep asking ourselves the questions, where else can you apply the thinking that the entire internet is your database, and there are tools that help you harvest that database, and then there are tools that help you shape and picture that database, and then you do the thinking. Mm. That's still your job. There are no tools for that yet.
And adding on to that is the fact that while we go in for a lot of projects as consultants, what we also found really useful is that we're able to work with teams and train them. Mm-hmm. So what happens when you work with them at a training level is that no matter what level or what teams they come from, they're able to pick up some very basic data skills and apply them quickly, mm-hmm. fast, without any background. So this also kind of helps them take that whole fear of working with data, you know, instead of just presenting data, now they're interrogating the data for actual insights, for storytelling, for actual business purposes as well.
And you're saying that companies are spending their resources hiring for the wrong type of role. They're looking at data scientists instead of data translators. What's the difference? Like what is the difference between data scientists and data translator?
A data scientist comes with a very specific sets of skills. Mm-hmm. So typically a data scientist would be conversant with SQL, conversant with different kinds of database structures, conversant with R, conversant with Python. The analysis part of it needs industry experience. I don't think data scientists can replace industry experience. So what is happening very frequently that we see is that a lot of organizations who have spent a lot of money in a data stack, that means hardware, software people, which includes data scientists. Mm-hmm. So millions of dollars have gone into that. And you have a company management working already who are already making some millions of dollars as salary. And these two different millions of dollars haven't found a way to talk to each other. Given the fact that the data tools are getting easier to use and more user-friendly, you have to either get your main frontline managers to become data savvy using these easily available and easy-to-use tools, mm-hmm. or you need to specifically find people whose job is going to be convert the complexity of data into business language and answer business questions.
To monetize it.
Either to monetize it or make sense of it. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think we find it is much easier to train an experienced person, in any industry on data than it is to train a data scientist about the industry.
So you're saying that it's easier to train someone who knows about marketing or sales in a company about data and how that can help them.
Correct.
Instead of training a data scientist about marketing and sales.
Correct.
Okay.
So
that's been our experience.
A project manager.
You
know, a marketing person previously would have marketing skills. Mm-hmm. But right now we're kind of reskilling them or upskilling them with some basic data skills, mm-hmm. so that they can then be the interface between your very deep end IT stack and your front-end marketing.
Yeah. So they're still doing marketing, it's just you're giving them different tools and different information.
Correct.
That they can
Correct.
Work with.
So Correct. If you look at journalists, for example, mm-hmm. The New York Times just launched data skills for journalists.
Yeah.
Why is it important for journalists to have data skills? Mm-hmm. So it tells you that, you know, while the world is sort of evolving in a digital way, you can't ignore your experience in journalism. It's just upskilling yourself with some new skills that you can still apply at work and still do the same work that you have been doing all this while.
Yeah.
Okay.
The goals haven't changed. Mm-hmm. If you go and talk to a business, their goal still is market share, is revenue growth,
yeah,
customer loyalty. Which of those have changed, regardless of digital or not?
Mm-hmm. It's still an old school template.
It's an old school template and it's a timeless template.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, profitability is profitability. Mm-hmm. It's just because you're doing it digitally doesn't mean that that has gone away.
It doesn't mean the money isn't money, right? Yeah,
correct. Mm-hmm. So you still have to make money at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So if you take any industry, insurance, for example, somebody who's got years of experience, understands the business, understands the human motivators behind insurance, and you equip that person with data, the use of data is going to be way more powerful than if it's the other way.
Yeah, because they'll know how to utilize that to
push
their sales.
They know what they're doing.
One of the biggest things that keep coming up with a lot of the organizations that we work with is shortage of talents. Mm-hmm. But instead of just upskilling and reskilling, you know, the current pool of talents that you have with new skills, we find the search for somebody who has these skills is more predominant.
Why is that?
Mm-hmm. When you can take your entire current team and upskill them with some skills that can be applied in the next level.
Right. I'm speaking to Subindu Mukherjee and Deviga Doreraj from a startup called The 10th Floor. And we'll be back with more after the break. BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
And we're back on Open for Business. I'm Arvind Yuvaraj, and in the studio with me this morning are Subindu and Deviga from The 10th Floor, a data consultancy based in Singapore that conducts classes here in Malaysia as well. And we're talking about the utilization of data in the workplace and how it can be made more efficient. Okay, as a startup that educates companies, and individuals about the benefits of marketing based on data or even like proper data harvesting, was it difficult in the beginning to like convince companies that they needed data to begin with? You know, because, you know, like big companies, traditional companies are a bit old school. You know, they might not be able to accept that they are not using their data enough or they're doing something wrong. So was it difficult convincing them of that they were not utilizing their data in the best way?
Yeah. So when asking companies to experiment, you have to remember the quote from Godfather. You have to make them a proposition that they can't refuse.
Okay.
So we made them some propositions that they couldn't refuse. Mm-hmm. It was attractive enough for a variety of reasons to experiment. And remember, in these multivariate tests, in these different experiments that we conduct, the brands are never exposed.
Mm. Okay, anonymous.
So we know which brand is doing what. People who are looking at the, who are exposed to the test, don't ever know which brand is running it.
Okay, so anonymity is like it's a powerful thing.
So that's why you can experiment.
Yeah.
Your brand is never at risk. So like we said, we made a proposition that they couldn't refuse.
Can you get into the proposition? You said Godfather. And now I can't even ask you the question.
No, like I said, it's anonymity. Mm-hmm. It's the courage to experiment because of the anonymity. It's the time and it's the cost. Mm-hmm. So as a package, it's a proposition you can't refuse.
Yeah.
And on top of that, at the end of the day, if they wanted to do it themselves, eventually they can.
I see.
Because everything that we do, we train.
You're giving them nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Okay. What kinds of companies? So, you know, in those companies that have adopted the data, which kinds of companies adopted the fastest? Like, are they the smaller companies, the newer companies, SMEs, or are they like the big brands? You know, the big F&B brands or the big global brands that adopt this faster?
Actually, yes. Surprisingly, it's the big brands that have gone on to it faster. Mm. Chances are because we started at a time when. The world hadn't quite recovered from the 2008 recession and market research budgets were looking like a luxury on a daily basis. Mm. And they were being cut. And a cut market research budget is not particularly useful. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, our methods were producing speed and sample sizes that are statistically significant and results. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, unfortunately, the first ones to adopt, at least in our experience, were the big multinationals, like we worked a lot with MasterCard, we worked a lot with Nestle, we did some work with Intel, big multinationals. I think they also have the bandwidth to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, you know, we can put a little bit of money aside and try something new.
They have the resources at their disposal. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We do wish we were working a lot more with the smaller companies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the risk appetite is where it needs to be balanced a bit.
Okay.
Having said that as well, I think we are most useful for smaller to medium companies,
mm-hmm.
mainly because we help maximize the investment before they go to market. So the research actually helps you sort of navigate the whole, you know, irreversible result of, you know, making a, say, a 1 million investment into advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Something goes wrong, how do you backtrack?
Yeah.
So having the insights earlier, knowing where to go and how to go about it kind of helps these business most.
Okay. So let's talk about some case studies. You worked with Nestle in Indonesia to launch their line of coffees with beauty benefits. So you basically merged green tea benefits with Nescafe or Nestle's line of coffee. How did data help them? Like, how did data help in that equation or in that marketing plan? Like, what did data tell Nestle that they didn't know already?
So one of the things that was quite clear right from the beginning is that it had antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look up antioxidants conversation in any Indonesian forum, you cannot miss the whole conversations around weight loss, clear skin. You can't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. So what they did, which was particularly brave, is that they actually took that. So we did a multivariate test,
mm-hmm.
of whole bunch of benefits of antioxidants. It's a data-driven multivariate test. It's not a complex thing, but I'm not getting into explaining that now. Not a complex thing. Almost anybody can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Data-driven multivariate test, and the test showed that these beauty benefits were the ones that were right on top. So they quite literally launched it like cosmetics. It was a coffee that had the look and feel and appeal of cosmetics.
So basically, we wanted to find out what was the motivator for that particular market for a new product. And we found that trying to sell coffee like a green tea with green tea benefits, we needed to kind of tap into the right motivator, because in Indonesia, there were a lot of other big players when it comes to coffee. So you've got like Kopi Kapalapi.
Mm-hmm.
So
Kopi Luwak.
Yeah, we kind of needed a space where we could identify what was the permission to win. And in a traditional sense, this would have been a focus group, you know, speak to a bunch of people. And then the two things that's involved here, cost and time.
Mm.
So that's what we said, you know, we're very lucky in the sense that we had clients who were brave enough to kind of, you know, go with our experiment. And this particular project was a little bit of an experiment when we did the multivariate testing. So we were able to finish it in just 10 days. And we were able to kind of find the right motivator, which is beauty. Like, you don't really associate coffee and beauty. You kind of associate coffee and staying awake.
Staying energized and, you know, waking up in the morning and stuff. Yeah,
and it's also a bit of, heart connection when you talk about coffee green bean.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I look beautiful by drinking this? So that's kind of where the data insights were very useful, because from the forums, we were able to identify that the biggest topic that these people were interested in is how to look beautiful.
We'll continue talking data, data science and data translators on today's Open for Business after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Because friends matter. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Open for Business on BFM 89.9. We're joined in the studio by Deviga Doreraj and Subindu Mukherjee. They run a startup called The 10th Floor, and they aim to change the way companies harvest and harness their data, or their vast amounts of data, for marketing and analytics. What is your target market? Like, what kinds of businesses can benefit from implementing the digital data strategy or the service that your company provides? Like, are they SMEs? Are they big companies?
We haven't really done any formal thinking around target marketing. Honestly,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We are open to anybody who wants to do experiments, because working with data needs an experimenting mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It is quite literally saying, we will run multiple experiments and multiple tests and multiple kinds of ways of looking at the data to arrive at what we think is the right thing to do. So we don't have any targets as such, and we work with data, and data is quite horizontal in the sense that it works across industries. It works across different kinds of verticals. My personal objective was always to replace 2% of market research budgets in Asia-Pacific with these methods.
2%?
2%.
I want to ask you about this. So, like, these days, the idea of too much data collection is seen as a negative thing, partly because of companies like Facebook and how they've handled data and all the scandals that keep popping up. The moment you say things like data or data harvesting or insight, it's been stigmatized in a way nowadays. What do you think about that? Like, what are your thoughts on the words like data and insight having that sort of slightly negative connotation nowadays?
You do not have to collect any personally identifiable information. You don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
But you've always collected information through traditional research on demographics, on age, on gender, on location, on income, on likes and dislikes. None of these are personally... You don't need to have any personally identifiable information for insights. It's not required. So everything we do has got no involvement of any sort of personally identifiable information whatsoever. If you choose to be unscrupulous, and if you choose to go and hack into databases of personal information and like malicious things, like for example in Singapore, the entire HIV database leak.
Yeah.
It's just malicious. It's got, who benefits from that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a damage to everything. Will there be malicious players with data? Yes, there will always be malicious players with data. So it's like anything else, you know. It's like a kitchen knife. So
are you going to leave that part hanging?
Yeah, I have to, because it's whose hands it's in and what intention you have. So what are you going to do? Ban kitchen knives?
No, of course not.
Yeah, so
You said Godfather before, and then now you're linking into the kitchen knife. I'm starting to see a slight pattern. I'm starting to see data in the things you're saying. No, but so is that the line, like, you know, between like data collection being used as a tool versus, you know, companies using it as intrusion of privacy? Like, there has to be some line. And a lot of companies have come out and they have collected data that they're not supposed to collect. And I think that's why people are sort of like, you know, afraid nowadays. They're like, you know, how much of my data do these companies know? Where is that line? Like, where is that line drawn?
So long as I think the line ethically should be drawn at personally identifiable information, I think. But what I think has got nothing to do with the way the world's going to move. Mainly because I think most governments have been very slow to legislate the data management business.
Yep.
Very slow. I mean, it's always a crisis and then some rule comes which is again defunct, because by that time, the malicious players have figured out how to bend that rule. The geeks are moving faster
than the
policymakers. So the policymakers need to get up to speed on how to legislate this properly.
I mean, but that also requires a little bit of self-policing at the end of the day.
Yes.
I mean, what you give out means you volunteered that information. Self-policing at the end of the day is what's going to help, really.
It goes both
some
ways.
Legislative and, you know, some rules around this, but it has to start from you.
What kinds of challenges are you facing at the moment as a startup, as a company?
I think challenges are pretty standard because, you know, like, because everything is slowing down. Experiments are also slowing down. So it's usual challenges that businesses face and particularly startups face. And we are self-funded. So that compounds our difficulties of, you know, cash flow management and managing resources, making sure getting paid on right time, usual business problems. And because we are self-funded, we are limited on how much of business development we can do. So we are not very aggressive in business development. In most cases, it's word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
People who have worked with us refer us to other people, and that's how we've grown so far. I personally like that kind of growth.
It's comfortable.
It's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And
allows us to experiment at our own time.
Yeah, and maybe I don't have $1 billion dreams. I have $1 million dreams. Not $1 billion dreams.
At the moment, or yet.
Yeah, I don't think we will ever be that. I think we will continue to remain a moderately sized company, running at a moderate pace, aggressively focused on delivering value for our clients. If that means sacrificing by taking less businesses, then so be it. Because if you're asking people to do experiments with you, you need to be very conscientious with what you do with their money.
Since you touched on growth and somewhat about the future of the company, I'll come back to that in a bit. So this is a couple of more questions before I let you guys go. But just to ask, and I'm sorry if it sounds a little bit harsh, but as a startup, as a company, the 10th floor obviously needs to future-proof itself. It needs to know what it's going to do, you know, maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. But if data becomes so accessible, if data becomes so easy and like, you know, anybody, a college graduate can come out, learn it over the weekend and understand what it's doing, doesn't that hurt the future of the 10th floor?
Not at all.
No?
No. Because it takes us to exactly the kind of place we want to be. We want to be in a place where we are the best in data-driven storytelling. So once everybody gets comfortable with data, it allows us to play that storyteller card much better, much faster.
So you're priming the market,
well,
sort of.
We're too small to prime the market. But with whoever we are working with, we are definitely making sure that they're getting to that direction.
So then that leads into, you know, what is the next step to get to that point? Like what are the immediate expansion plans for the 10th floor?
From day one, it's been about making data simple, accessible and interpretable for people who are working on a daily basis on businesses. So the next things that we are getting into is artificial intelligence, machine learning and predictive, making that super accessible. And super easy. Right now, it's still in the geek realm a little bit, but it's slowly coming out of that. We are developing capabilities that can be easily transferred to people. So once that happens, then another kind of storytelling opportunity will emerge.
Right. I've been speaking with Subindu Mukherjee and Deviga Doreraj of The 10th Floor. You can check out their company at thetenthfloor.com. You can also listen to this podcast again on the BFM app or the BFM website. On Spotify, we are parked under the podcast section. This has been Arvind Yuvaraj on Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.